So here we are, the second talk of the 2005 Easter Meditation Retreat. Hope you've had a wonderful breakfast, full of energy. Spent yesterday just getting into the meditation retreat. Usually by the second or third day, things can start to happen. Literally because you started building up momentum, the momentum of letting go. But in these meditation retreats, you always want to give as much information, as much instruction as possible to make it easier and easier. Basically, you probably find your way yourself if you just learn how to let go. But there's something which the Buddha always talked about called the five hindrances, which need to be understood well because they illustrate why it is that people don't get into deep states of meditation. Those five hindrances are just basically, according to the Buddha, what usually is said is sensory desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and remorse, and doubt being the fifth. However, those five hindrances are much more refined and profound than those very easy descriptions indicate. So I was mentioning yesterday, the words, the descriptions, they only give an approximation to the real meaning. And one of the great things with these five hindrances is to know that if they're not there at all, if you truly have abandoned those five hindrances, there is literally nothing between you and the attainment of jhanas. You've got a clear passage. And usually when those five hindrances are gone, you just go into the jhana straight away. So that's a sign the five hindrances have been abandoned. So those of you who haven't got into jhana yet, you know the five hindrances are playing around there somewhere. And so this is why I want to give this talk, to actually show what they really are. Even like the first one, about sensory desire. Sometimes, the Buddha gave this beautiful simile of it's like being like someone who takes a loan. Because all your pleasures from the world outside is always taking a loan of real energy. And you've got to pay it back afterwards. And sometimes this is what happens when you start a retreat. Because of always seeking your pleasure in the world of the five senses, after a while, when you stop that search, you feel dull. You're actually paying off the debt of the sensory world. Just leave it alone. Don't look for pleasures. Just be patient for a while. And then eventually, the mind's pleasures, the true pleasures, will start to manifest. The other simile which the Buddha gave, which is perhaps the most profound, was the simile of the wet and sappy sticks. And those similes of the wet and sappy sticks. He said that it's like a person wants to make fire by rubbing two sticks together. And they take a sappy stick from out of the river and they try to make a fire with that. They will only weep wearisomeness and tiredness and frustration because it's too wet. So they throw that one away and they look for another stick which is lying close to the bank of the river. It's not wet on the outside, but it's sappy on the inside. And again, they can't make a fire with that. So they've got to go away from the river to find a real dry stick. And that they can make fire with. And in the simile, in the Pali, there's a play on words there, because fire is very similar to the word for jhana, for meditate. It's the same word, jayati, to burn or to meditate. Now, what we really mean in that simile is that I've taken you out of the river of your sensory world. And so it's very hard to make a fire with you yet. But we are drying you out. Drying you out because there's not much to mess around with. No TVs, no radios, no sex. You got a little bit of food, but you haven't got too much choice of what you eat. So your sensory desires are being very limited. And so after a while you dry out, and when you dry out it means that sensory desire hindrance gets so weakened it tends to disappear, and then the mind can very easily go inside, because when it stops its habitual search for pleasure and happiness outside, only then can it turn inside to see the pleasure within the mind rather than outside. Because look, every time that you feel a bit tired, upset, ill, sick, upset, whatever it is, whatever negativity you feel, how do you usually deal with that negativity? It's always to try and seek some pleasure somewhere. To go and have a chocolate cake. If you're a woman, go shopping. Go watch the TV, sort of, you know, listen to some music on the radio, whatever it is. You see, this is our usual way of dealing with the problems in life, going to look for some sensory pleasure. And of course, that just takes you outside in the opposite direction to meditation, which is why that sometimes when you're bored, silly in the afternoon, it's only 3 o'clock and there's another 2 hours till tea. Oh my goodness, what should I do? And you start just searching through your inventory of fantasies or plans or memories of the past. You actually make some sensuality for yourself, because that's your usual habit of how we deal with some of the unpleasantness of life. It's called sensory desire. It actually stops the process of going inwards, stops the process of just accepting what's happening as you go and look for something else. That desire for something else, the moving away from this to something else, that's the essential meaning of sensory desire. Wanting something more, something different, something else. And you can actually see that happening in this meditation. At every moment, you ask, what do I want? What do I want? What do I want? That used to be a mantra which I used to use sometimes. If I was restless, bored, fed up, I'd actually stop and ask myself, what do I want? And I started thinking, what do I really want in this moment? And I thought, if I really get it, is that going to really help? No, not at all. And after a while, I just exhausted everything. I didn't want anything. So I sort of gave up wanting and just was peaceful. So ask yourself, whenever you have a sensory desire, what do you really want in this moment, right now? If you get it, is it going to do you any good? And the answer is always no. Well, a couple of months ago, I was reading the newspaper. There was an article there about this guy in the United States who won the world record for lotteries. He won the first prize in this big U.S. lottery. It was worth about $800 or $900 million. But apparently they tax you on that in the U.S. So he got some deal with the tax department and with everybody else. And they would let him have like $111 million. And, you know, without tax, and give it straight away, and that would be his prize. Now, of course, $111 million is enough for anybody. You know, it's a couple of million U.S. dollars for every year of your life. My goodness. And the article was, he was just being sent to prison. Because he was a happy little fellow before, had his friends, wasn't very rich, but, you know, not really poor, and just having a good old time. As soon as he became filthy rich, he just psychologically, he just went completely downhill and ended up, I think, doing some stupid crime and going to jail. And just, it shows you, just if you get all that money, it's just not going to make you happy. If you have sex, if you go and watch a TV or a movie or whatever, it isn't really going to make you happy. It's just like filling in the time, that's all. It's a distraction. So we should actually understand all this reason why we send the mind out there into the world looking for happiness. We're actually looking in the wrong direction, we're looking in the wrong place. So every time the mind starts to go wandering out into the sensory world, ask yourself, why? What do I want? Of all those five senses, the one which is the hardest to turn off, strange as it may seem, is the sense of hearing. You can actually be sitting here in your meditation cushion and the body disappears. You can't see. Your eyes are shut. You know, smelling and tasting is very easy to turn off. The one thing which is very hard to turn off is sound. Because sometimes it may be a sound of someone moving, or the birds, or something else, a bang, or the sound of the traffic. You wonder why it is that I can't actually keep my mind inside, why it always goes out to sound. I often contemplated that, because for myself, even in Thailand, the most disturbing of the senses was hearing. It was only after contemplation you realize that that's our last line of defense. You know, actually seeing is important, to protect our body and its integrity, its safety. But more than even seeing, it's actually hearing. And every time, even if we're very still, we still want to hear, because we want to protect ourselves. It's just like the attachment to our sense of self, to our body, to its safety, which stops us from taking away the sense of hearing. Because if you can't see and you can't hear, then sometimes you feel incredibly vulnerable. Anyone could creep up behind you. There may be a psychopath on this retreat. We don't really vet the people coming here. People have come from all different places. They may have some extreme psychiatric problems, especially at night time when you're the last one in this hall. Whatever it is. Whatever it is, so we get afraid. Of course we're afraid of really hearing. Is that them coming now? And it's that fear actually stops us letting go of the sense of hearing. And sometimes people are, fortunately here they're not having conversations, but sometimes whenever we hear a sound, we say, what is that? Why is that? Basically, the sound is none of your business. There are no I guarantee 100% there are no psychopaths on this retreat, so you're perfectly safe. There's no dangers here, because even the devas are guarding all of us here. It's a very, very safe retreat, so you can actually completely let go. You don't have to worry about anything whatsoever at all in any which way. So giving you that confidence, you should be able just to let go of sound. So you don't listen outside at all. And this is actually what we mean, letting go of that hindrance of concern for the five sense world. Or even concern for the physical body. Because every now and again we get an ache or an itch. And sometimes you get a mosquito landing on you. And sometimes, especially that mosquito, that's only a mosquito, never mind. But perhaps that's the one with dengue fever. Or over here, we don't have dengue fever over here, we have Ross River virus. Perhaps that's the one with Ross River virus, like dengue fever. Perhaps this is the one. Should I squash it? Should I push it away? Of course, that is just, the chances are that that's, you know, the one with Ross River virus. I think only about 6 or 7 people get that a year, you know, at most in Australia. So your chances of getting that, absolutely so minimal and so small. And of course, the day was, they don't like mosquitoes with Ross River virus come in here. They just screen them out. Only the good mosquitoes can come in here. They're just to test your mindfulness, that sort. So you're perfectly safe. The point being here is sometimes that you worry too much. You start thinking about it. Again, it's just protecting your body. Let go of your body. And the body looks after itself much better. But that sensory desire, that first hindrance, its basic cause is attachment to your body and to its safety, to its longevity, to its health. You get a little ache and think, oh, it's only an ache, but maybe it's more than an ache. Maybe it's some cancer in there coming up. Now, if I maybe, this is what happened to me in my early years as a monk meditating. I would lose the feeling in my leg after about 10 minutes. And you get that pins and needles, and then your leg will go numb. And instead of actually just letting it go and leaving it alone, I started thinking, oh, my leg's gone numb. I didn't really know too much about biology at the time. And I thought, my goodness, that means the blood is not circulating in my leg. And I did read, if your blood is not circulating, then after a while, like, you get gangrene. And gangrene, at the very least, if it doesn't kill you, you have to have your leg taken off. I've seen articles about people who had their legs taken off because of gangrene in their legs. I thought, I'm going to get gangrene. I'm going to have my leg taken off. So I just moved my leg straight away to get the blood going back again. And again, it was completely overreaction, as any doctor would tell you. I learned afterwards, I think it's just, you know, the blood on the outside, just the inside is still going perfectly well. It's just a bit on the outside is not going so smoothly, but it's perfectly safe. My goodness, sometimes people watch the TV, watch the soccer or a movie, and their leg goes to sleep for hours and don't even realize it, and they're perfectly healthy afterwards. So there was one time I decided, no, every time my leg goes to sleep, I'm so concerned about this, I always have to worry about it, move my posture, it disturbs my meditation. So I just let it go. And I made this little resolution, not quite the same as the Buddha's resolution, though my blood dries up and my bones turn to dust, I will not move from my seat. It was just, okay, if I get gangrene, I have to take my leg off, so what? I just sat there, and I didn't move at all. And of course, what happened after a few minutes, calling the bluff of the body, just the numbness disappeared all by itself. The blood came back all by itself. I didn't move at all. It was just the nature. The body will balance itself when you leave it alone. So that taught me a lesson. I don't have to worry about the five senses. I don't have to worry about the body. I can literally, I can put them down, leave them alone. I don't need to worry about them. The worry and the concern about your body and the five senses, its safety, its health, you know, worrying about the aches and the pains or the sounds outside, searching for pleasure outside, that's all part of the first of the five hindrances, sensual desire. That's why the best simile which I have, I mentioned it the first night, look upon your body and the five senses like your car. Even a car has got five wheels, four on the bottom and a steering wheel, makes number five. Now your body's got five senses. You put it in the car park. You lock it up. And you know it's safe. So you can leave it alone. You don't have to worry about your car. Have you gone out to the car park to see if your car is safe since you came here? I hope you haven't. So when you meditate, you don't have to sort of interrupt and go look at the body to see if it's safe or worry about sounds or feelings in the body. Just drop them all. Let them go. Because concern for those things is the first of the hindrances. What it means is you cannot get still at all. You've always got something to worry about outside. You can never go inside. So if that is your problem, you're always worried about your body, about always hearing sounds, always being disturbed. So what the Ajahn Chah meant, it's not the sound disturbing you. It's you going out there to see what's happening with the sound. It's not that your car disturbs you. You go out to the car park to look at your car. It's not the aches and the pains in the body which are the problem. It's you go out disturbing them. Leave them alone. Don't disturb them. And they'll completely go away. When that first hindrance is disappeared, or when the most of it's disappeared, you get a stage of meditation which the Buddha called Kaya Pasadi, the tranquility of the body. That's when you're just sitting here. You can't feel your body anymore. When you call that tranquility, this word samatha, or in this case pasadi, both literally the same word. Pasadi is actually, as in a sense, just the same verb, the same word, just coming from two different angles. When you have that tranquility of the body, that calmness, you know it's tranquil, you know it's calm when it disappears. First of all, it calms down, and then it disappears from your consciousness. Not a problem, it's gone beyond your radar anymore. Because the mind only sees, only knows what's moving. What's still, what isn't moving at all, disappears. So once you calm the body down, the next thing which happens, it disappears. You can't feel it anymore. That is what we call the tranquility of the body. And when you have tranquilized that body, you can't feel it anymore. It's such a relief. You're sitting here. You're with the mind. You don't know what's happening with the body. You don't have any feelings in the body which you're aware of anymore. No aches, no pains. It's a beautiful to have that experience. There's a stage in the meditation. A stage where the body has disappeared from your consciousness. And that shows that the first hindrance has been pretty much overcome. But of course, you can still have like the bothered with hearing. It means that you still haven't completely overcome that hindrance. You're still concerned for that sensory world. So don't concern yourself with sound. It's somebody else's problem. You're protected. Everything's going to be okay. So just let go and allow the mind to go inside. The second of those hindrances is called ill will. And most people understand that means we get angry at somebody. You get angry at somebody for making a noise this morning, or angry at somebody for taking the last piece of toast, or angry at someone for just taking too many beans and they're sitting right in front of you and you're going to smell them all day. Whatever it is, the anger which you sometimes have, that is only the coarsest form of that second hindrance. So that's an easy one to get rid of. You know, just don't worry about other people. Have loving kindness. It's not their problem. They're just people are just being people, that's all. But the real ill will, the aversion, which is a hindrance in meditation, is the ill will to what's happening now. So often that we can't just watch this moment without being fault-finding. And when we're fault-finding with this moment, we don't like it anymore. We just don't want to be here. That's called aversion. When you don't want to be here, it means you want to be somewhere else. You can't have tranquility of mind then. So you might just be watching this present moment. I don't like this present moment. That's hot, it's too cold, I'm too hungry, or I ate too much, or I didn't eat enough. People are making, I don't want to be here. What am I doing this for? This is my holiday period. Spent all this money. I could be back in Singapore now shopping. I could be out watching a movie. I could be doing this and doing that. And you start thinking things like that. You don't want to be here. When you don't want to be here, that's called ill will. It's hard to overcome that at first because there's a certain amount of unpleasantness which is accompanied with life. And life isn't always fun and games. And sometimes you have to endure. You have to endure the unpleasant, even the aches, the pains, the itches, the mosquitoes biting, the tiredness even, to be able to endure it, just to accept it without any ill will. Without any ill will means I don't want to be anywhere else but just here. You overcome that ill will with contentment. If you have that ill will, you don't want to be here. As many of you know from that story I gave about the prison visit, and the monk who was telling the prisoners about what it was like in a monastery, and the prisoners were so disgusted at the schedule and the life in our monastery, which is far more ascetic than any prison. They said, "That's terrible in your monastery, why didn't you come in here and stay with us?" They invited him to stay in the prison. And of course it made me start to contemplate the difference between a prison and freedom. And basically, you've heard this before, a prison is any place you don't want to be. Freedom is any place you're content to be. Any place. The situation, the place, is irrelevant. It's whether you want to be here or not. So you can be at this retreat, sitting on your seat, with a full belly, nice air conditioning or whatever else. If you don't want to be here, then you're in prison. Wherever you are. Sometimes people leave and they go back home. And they're still in prison. They don't want to be there anyway. They go to work. They don't want to be at work. They've got this aversion which carries on, follows them throughout their life. Any place is not good enough. The whole world, the whole life becomes a prison. They're always running to something else because they never find any contentment, even for a moment. That's such sad. But here we find you don't need to have the most pleasant situation. You don't need to have a body which is fit and healthy. You don't need to have a body which doesn't have any aches or pains or gut aches or whatever. You can be free at any moment with whatever you have by wanting to be here. It overcomes the ill will straight away. Today, someone took my advice. They opened up the window. They must have come here very early this morning. And some people say, why did they come here and open the window? When everyone's meditating, I'm going to surreptitiously shut it to keep the mosquitoes out. That's ill will again. It means you're in prison again. Window open, window closed. I'm going to be content no matter what happens. In other words, I'm happy to be here. Window open, window closed, who cares? Nice food, food which upsets my stomach, who cares? I'm going to be happy to be here. When you have that contentment, ill will is completely gone. And you've got a sick and aching body. Be happy to be here with your aching body. Be content to have your cancer. Then you are free. This is how we overcome the hindrance of ill will. Being content. And that ill will is an important hindrance because too often it comes up and stops the progress of meditation. Sometimes it's very subtle. You may even have this beautiful nimitta coming up, and you think you should be content with that, but no, I want more. I don't want this, I want the jhana. Now you have ill will. You have ill will towards this beautiful nimitta. And that's why you can't get into the jhanas. And you're not happy to be here. Doesn't matter what it is, it can be the most beautiful, blissful state, but I want more. That is called ill will. It means you can't go further. In fact, the whole thing usually disappears. So, don't want to be somewhere else. That's called ill will. It's lack of contentment. Which is why in our meditation is a wonderful little mantra you can repeat to yourself. This is good enough, this is good enough, this is good enough. Every now and again, just mention that to yourself, this is good enough. And that builds up contentment, that overcomes ill will. This is good enough. My meditation, yeah, it's good enough, I'm good enough, the monks are good enough, the food's good enough, everything's good enough. If you really understood the meaning of that, this is good enough, straight away you get so still and peaceful because ill will has been abandoned. You're happy with whatever happens. You're someone with who is easily satisfied, as we chant every morning and evening. Not demanding in nature, as we chant also in that Metta Sutta. So don't be demanding of your meditation. Don't be demanding of yourself. Don't be demanding of me. Don't be demanding of the retreat. Be easily satisfied. Ah, this is good enough. I was telling my monks earlier on, just to be able to sit on a cushion, that's good enough. That satisfies me. Just be able to sit down here and cross my legs and just close my eyes and have time to meditate. I'm so grateful just for that opportunity. What happens next is just gravy, just extra. And I do things like that. Oh, this is good enough. I can just sit down and be quiet. That's all I want. Anything else is extra. Because I don't want anything, then you do get heaps extra. When you want extra, okay, I'm going to get into jhana. Come on, get into jhana. Then, of course, it never happens because you have ill will, too much wanting. So see if you can develop that this is good enough practice. So whatever you're watching, you appreciate it. You're someone who is easily satisfied, not demanding in nature. You're just able just to stay with this without criticizing it. Not a fault-finding mind, but appreciative mind. And it goes against the ill will, which stops us developing our meditation. So whatever you're experiencing, it's good enough. It's not what you're experiencing which is a problem. It's how you're experiencing it is a problem. You can have a restless mind, sloth and torpor, whatever. That is not the problem. It's what you're doing about it. The way you're approaching this, by wanting something else, that's called sort of sensory desire. Wanting the senses, that's sensory desire. Wanting it to be somehow different, that's ill will. It's the way you're your way you're approaching it is a problem. Which is why the last night, when I told that story about when I had all those fantasies and thoughts and desires in that six range retreat and I couldn't stop them, it wasn't those thoughts which was the problem for me, it was the way I was looking at it, trying to get rid of it, having ill will towards those things. And that's why they kept on going. And as soon as I said, okay, you can do whatever you like, if you want to think sexual fantasies, science fiction, whatever you want to think, go for it. As soon as I had peace towards that, this is good enough, the whole thing stopped. And it's just what the hindrances are. The hindrances actually are between you and your meditation object. It's how you're watching this, how you're experiencing this moment. Which actually gets me on to the next couple of hindrances, sloth and torpor. Sloth and torpor is no problem at all. If you're sleepy, then be sleepy. You have full permission, and I make this public, to snore in this meditation hall. So if you're sleepy, go for it. When I say that, the chances of you sleeping and snoring are diminished quite considerably. When you give permission for it to happen, it usually doesn't happen. The point is, I'm giving you freedom. What happens with sloth and torpor, and this happened to me. You can imagine in early years in the jungles of Thailand, we'd only have 3 or 4 hours sleep a night because it was very strict and very forceful. And, you know, the food was disgusting, so you didn't have much vitamins. So you're weak, and it was hot and humid, much more so than here. So it's physically very demanding. So when you got up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and so started meditating by 3:15. And one monastery I went to had its little novices and they never made it for the 3:15 morning chanting. So the abbot said, if you don't make it again tomorrow at 3:15, the bell goes at 2 o'clock. And they didn't make it the next day. They should have just got the novices to get up at 2 o'clock, not me. That was unfair. I was up. So they're very strict, these monasteries. And obviously what happened when you were meditating there at 3:15 or 3:30 after the chanting, or 2:15 sometimes, you'd half the monks, you know, with their head would be right down, be half asleep. Those who were trying would be nodding. They're trying to get up, but they couldn't. Most of the time it was just really difficult with sloth and torpor. And I'd be a fighter to try and stop, you know, my mind being slothful. So you try and watch the breath, and then you sort of go off into these dark, blank spaces for a while. Then you find your breath again. And eventually, through effort, you break through. And you know, so you get through sloth and torpor. That's using effort. But as soon as you broke through sloth and torpor, you're just so restless. The mind would be thinking about all sorts of things. And so I'd slow my mind down. Calm down, calm down. As soon as the mind calmed down, you're back in sloth and torpor again. And many of you might know that. And after a while, it took me many years to find out what was going on. You use reflection, you use mindfulness. I was going completely the wrong direction. It was just like an ego being ashamed of being sort of a monk who always had sloth and torpor, who was always sleeping in the morning. That's not the way to go, just by forcing. Because as soon as you force that mind, the reason why you have sloth and torpor, it's nature. The mind is dull because it hasn't got energy. And if you try and do things and try and force the mind, what little energy it does have, you're just taking away. You're using it. You're wasting it. Going back to that paradigm of the knower and the doer, the two parts of your mind, if you do a lot, you've got nothing left for knowing, pure knowing. That's the cause of sloth and torpor, the dullness of the mind, because you've been doing too much. And the mind hasn't got enough energy. The knower has been starved of energy, so it's not bright. So stop doing things. When you stop doing things, then your mind will get dull. The reason is because it has to build up its energy source naturally. Allow it to be dull. Make peace with your dullness and sleepiness. Say to yourself, this is good enough to be dull. Do not fight. If you don't fight that dullness, just leave it alone. Be at peace with it. You find it disappears after a short time. It disappears because your natural energies, instead of being wasted in fighting, doing, struggling and striving, the energies flow naturally into the knowing. They're not wasted into the doing. When they start flowing into the knowing, you just wake up and the mind becomes bright. When it does become bright, because you haven't been feeding the struggler, this doer, when you do become bright, you're also peaceful as well. So don't struggle with sloth and torpor. If you really are sleepy, go to bed. Which is why we have our single rooms here. You don't need to be embarrassed. There are times, you don't know why, it's just nature. Sometimes because of the rhythms of your body or the day or whatever, sometimes at the oddest times you just need to go and take a nap. Just try that. If you're really struggling with sloth and torpor, go back to your room, lay down, half an hour is probably all you need. But don't set the alarm clock, just lay down, see what time you get up. And you get up and you're nice and clear. Because you haven't done anything, the energies of the mind go back into the knower. When you get up, you can actually come back in here and have a beautiful meditation. Because you've developed this peacefulness, you're working with the body, not against it. You're not struggling and striving and doing and controlling. It's the control freak which tires the mind. So you just let it go. Make peace with sloth and torpor. And after a while, sloth and torpor just disappears. And then you've got this wonderful peace which comes afterwards. Nature, that's all. In many monasteries sometimes that people struggle with sloth and torpor. In those Zen monasteries you just used to have these monks going up and down the line. You just bend over a little bit and you get whacked on the back with a stick. I went to one of those Zen monasteries when I was a young meditator. It was in England. about 2 years before I became a monk. You can imagine what it's like. You're a student. You know, you're not, genetically, you're not programmed to get up early in the morning. But you did get up there in the morning, and you're sitting out there, and I was really sleepy, and this guy came up with this big stick. But I have good karma. I was very fortunate. It was the guy sitting next to me. He was nodding a little bit more. So he was the one who got hit with the stick. They said it doesn't hurt, but I still don't believe them. It certainly sounded terrible. But after the guy sitting next to you got hit with that stick, my goodness, all my snot and torpor disappeared straight away. Just fear, that was all. That's not a good way of overcoming sloth and torpor, with fear. It's much better to overcome it with wisdom, because then it overcomes once and for all, and you're just really peaceful and still, not through fear, but just through nature. And it's the same with restlessness. So restlessness is the other side of the coin to sloth and torpor. This is why when you force the mind out of sloth and torpor, you're left with restlessness. When you act in negativity with restlessness, I don't want to be restless, so shut up. You just go back into sloth and torpor. Two sides of the same coin. And if you try and subdue restlessness by holding your mind still, I'm not going to be restless. I'm going to hold my mind on the breath. It's going to stay in the present moment or else. Of course, that causes restlessness. There's too much control, too much doing. So if you're restless, make peace with your restlessness. Allow restlessness to be. Mind, if you're restless, that's fine with me. The door of my heart is open to you. If you want to go and think about these things, go for it. When you make peace with it, you're not struggling with it. You're allowing it to be. It's making it an object of your mindfulness. Of course, you're not feeding it anymore. The mindfulness feeds on control. So the restlessness feeds on control. So don't control. Let it go. Leave it alone. Make peace with it. Allow it to be. And your restlessness will just disappear. Usually it goes very quickly when you really let it go. But when you try and stop it with force, it gets worse. So in both restlessness and sloth and torpor, the way to overcome that is just by making peace with whatever you're experiencing. I wasn't really a hippie when I was young, but I sympathized. And I did go on a few marches. Make peace, not war, we used to chant. And I still say that as a Buddhist monk. Whatever you're experiencing in your mind, make peace, not war, with your mind. Do you understand what I mean? Too often you're making war with your mind. I don't want this, I want it to be different. I don't want to be restless, I want to be peaceful. I don't want to be dull, I want to be alert. That's making war. Make peace with it. This moment has come because it's caused by so many conditions. It's nothing to do with you, anatta. It's just nature, that's all. It's nature to have sloth and torpor sometimes. It's nature for restlessness to arise sometimes. If you're not an arahat yet, that must happen. So allow it to be. Watch it. Be peace with it. And then you find it disappears by itself. Because you're making peace, you are making the causes for those hindrances to disappear. You just wait patiently. And patiently you wait, and then all of those sloth and torpor, restlessness, just disappears. And you're nice and still. You're alert, but still. You're staying in one thing, with alertness. And you notice that alertness, that mindfulness, grows and grows and grows. Sloth and torpor is just an extreme of a whole gradual scale of mindfulness. And after a while, you'll understand that what you think is mindfulness now, even the mindfulness you have listening to me, is pretty much close to sloth and torpor. You're not really fully awake. Maybe you can listen to me, but not with the full awareness. As you build more and more peace, the mindfulness gets stronger and stronger and stronger. You really become alert and awake. The mind becomes energized. The knower gets all of the energy. And this is like the blossoming, the growing, the empowering of mindfulness. And that is one of the aims of this retreat, to get this superpower mindfulness, the complete opposite of the spectrum to sloth and torpor, where the mind is just so powerful, whatever you see, whatever you hear, whatever you look at, you see more deeply into it. And because you see more, the mind engages with what it's looking at. You have fun and joy. If you want to look at the breath, you can look upon it for hours and always see new things. If you want to look inside deeper than the breath, you can see this nimitta and then the mind itself. The opposite of sloth and torpor. And sloth and torpor will just go naturally over the 9 days. I expect you to be dozy and sleepy now, which is why every now and again I have to raise my voice or crack a joke to wake you up. It's nature. But after a while I won't need to do that anymore. Because it's nature after 2 or 3, 4, 5 days. It's when the peace starts to come in. You start to become more alert, more awake, more energized. And also more smiley. Because the energy of the mind is that happiness. And you start to really get into this retreat. And you don't need, this is why I don't have these bells. You don't need to force yourself to stay up late at night. You just don't feel like sleeping. You wake up in the morning, you just want to get up there and meditate. Because the mind is bright and energized. Sloth and torpor completely disappeared. And the last of those hindrances, before I go on too late, is doubt. Doubt, thinking too much. Wanting to know. Already I've given you the answer to that doubt thing. You can't figure it out through just mere thinking. All thinking misses the point. It's approximations. You can't find what the food tastes like by reading the menu. Even if you want to see a film and you read the review is not the movie. So I don't know if you've asked people, those coming on a retreat for the first time, what's a retreat like this? Now, those of you who come from Singapore, from Terengganu, you may have asked people who have been here before, what's it like going on a retreat with Ajahn Brahm? What's it like in a retreat center in Perth? I don't know, you may have asked those questions, but I guarantee you one thing, whatever they say, it's going to be something different. This is actually one of the sayings of the Buddha. It's one of those sayings which I remember. It's in the Sapurisa Sutta. It says, whatever you think it's going to be, it will always be something else. And I thought, wow, that's really interesting. Whatever you think it is, it'll always be different. That means it's a complete waste of time thinking about it. And how true that is. No, we're trying to think what it's going to be like. We're trying to think what it's going to be like to have lunch, what it's going to be like to get jhanas, what it's going to be like to become enlightened. I guarantee you one thing, it's not what you expect. Completely different than you think. And that's life. So we think too much. So just let go of all that thinking. And when you stop that thinking, all the doubt stops. As long as you're thinking, there'll always be doubt. Because thinking is an approximation, and you know it's an approximation. You know, that's what it says on the menu, but is that really going to taste nice or not nice? What is it going to be like? It's always doubting. So once we actually get past that thinking, just don't give it any value, but allow it to go, then all this doubt business disappears. We're not sort of trying to second guess the future. We're not even trying to describe this moment. And my goodness, when you get into the deeper stages of meditation, you realize you can't describe these things with words. They're just too profound. The language doesn't go that far. And so sometimes all this thinking, you realize just how what a waste of time it truly is. So we shut up. And that's the end of doubt. Whenever you think, there'll always be doubt. No matter how much evidence you have, there's still room for doubt. As long as you're thinking. Doubt is just a symptom of a mind which moves. So don't try and solve the doubt through thinking about it. That just makes more doubt. Don't try and solve the doubt by asking lots of questions. That just makes more questions. As I mentioned last night, I only had 7 questions in the box last night. Those 7 questions are going to probably make about 14 questions tonight. And those 14 are going to give birth to about 21 the next night. By the end of this retreat, that box is going to be overflowing. It's a good fun for the evening anyway, so I don't mind. But the point is, that's not the way to end questions, by asking them. The way to end all questions is to go to stillness. And there you understand where that doubt comes from. Doubt is just a movement of the mind. Doubt is just a lack of stillness in the mind. When the mind is still and can see, it doesn't need to doubt anymore. It can see. It doesn't need to ask questions of anything, because it can ask questions of what you're experiencing right now and get the answer straight away. No doubt anymore. Clear seeing. So this is actually how we overcome those five hindrances. And hopefully you understand that once those hindrances are overcome, there's nothing between you and those deep states of meditation. You're not concerned about the sensory world or your body or sounds and things like that. They just disappear. The body is just let go of. There's no ill will, so you're completely accepting of this moment, whatever it is. If it's pleasant, unpleasant, yeah, it's fine by me. It's good enough. Because of that stillness and that peace, just the mind is no obstacle to the course of meditation. As you watch the breath settles down, the breath disappears, the nimitta comes up, the nimitta settles down, the nimitta disappears, first jhana comes, settles down, disappears, second jhana arises, it just all goes, a natural flow. No ill will at all, nothing stopping the mind being in the moment. Restlessness and sloth and torpor, you just make peace with it, you're making the conditions for those things to disappear in the future. You're causing them to disappear by just making peace. Oh, I'm tired. Nature. Restless nature. Let them both be, and they both disappear. And you come to this beautiful middle, alertness but stillness. And just wait for the experience, and all doubt disappears. Stop thinking. Stop assessing the meditation or the meditation retreat. So I said last night, in a scientific experiment, you wait to the very end before you make your conclusions. Not now. Now's the time for gathering the data. To know life. To know life. Know this moment. Know yourself deeper and deeper and deeper. And then all the doubts will be answered. Not before. So that's the five hindrances. Very good. Any questions about those five hindrances? Do you know them very well? It says in the Chinese Art of War, to know yourself, know your enemy. If you know yourself and know your enemy, 1,000 battles fought, 1,000 battles won. Know your non-self, know the five hindrances, 1,000 meditations, 1,000 jhanas. That's your bobs. Perth Art of Meditation. Any questions or comments? Okay, so I think I've given you enough there. So hopefully some of that sunk in. It's a beautiful day out there. Just go and enjoy the moment wherever you are. This is good enough. Don't worry about sound and things like that. You're perfectly safe. Make peace with restlessness. Make peace with sloth and torpor. Don't worry about doubts. Just stop thinking. And everything will just work fine. And you'll become a happy little meditator. Okay, we're going to have interviews in a few minutes' time. Hopefully you've seen the poster.